And during some of the toughest times, I have a little piece of paper in my wallet that I keep all the time, even to this moment, of different things that mean to me, different sayings that mean a lot to me, things that I strive for, recognizing my responsibility to give back.
Reoccurring mantra I got into in college where I would just say, I'm going to break the mold.
2 days after my second injury, my dad flew out to Indiana and we drove home, went right up to my room, slept for a day, and then I woke up the next morning, I spray painted my wall, no quitting me. I remember, you know, there is no quitting me and I won't give up.
The number one thing you gotta remember is you're transferring energy. And whatever energy you got is the energy the viewers are gonna have.
You are listening to Intentional Performers with Brian Levinson, where we talk with experts of craft about their journey and what they have intentionally done to be their best self. As we talk with them, the hope is that we uncover intentional gems that you can use in your life. Now, let's kick it over to Brian to introduce this week's guest.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Intentional Performers Podcast. I am Brian Levinson, excited to have you with us today for another incredible episode. But before we get to today's guest, I'd like to share a bit about myself. So my day job is that I work as an executive coach and a mental performance coach. And I founded a company called Strong Skills. And at Strong Skills, our team is on a mission to change how the world thinks about soft skills. See, we are facilitators and coaches, and we truly believe that labeling competencies like leadership, teamwork, and communication as soft devalues and minimizes the importance of these skills. And one of the strong skills that we teach is what we call shift your mind. And the teachings come from my book, which came out in October of 2020. If you enjoyed today's conversation or any of our past guests, then know you're going to love the book. You can head over to Amazon or anywhere books are sold to purchase. And you can even listen to the audiobook via Audible. Thanks to all of you who have already purchased, and I've been truly overwhelmed by the response the book has gotten so far. Lastly, if you enjoyed today's conversation or any of our previous episodes, we'd love it if you went over to iTunes and wrote us a review. It really helps us expand our reach for the podcast. Thanks to all of you who have already done so, and let's continue to share these intentional performers with the world. Now to today's guest. Dahani Jones is someone who I didn't grow up with. He, I think, is about 6 years older than me, but we went to the same high school, and his name was a name that we heard over and over again growing up. He helped our high school get to the state championship. He went on to play football at the University of Michigan, where he earned all Big Ten honors. And you're going to hear him mention the University of Michigan experience quite a bit in today's conversation. He is quite proud of his time at University of Michigan, and being an alum is something that he likes to talk quite a bit about. He then went on, he was selected in the sixth round of the NFL draft, and he ended up playing 11 seasons, playing for the Philadelphia Eagles and New York Giants, and finally with the Cincinnati Bengals, where he really had a transformative experience in his own career, and he really took off in some of his later years and performed some of his best ball at the end of his career, which is not necessarily typically the case in professional football. But I think what makes Dahani so unique and why I was so excited to have him on the podcast is that he has range. He's not just a football player. He's actually more of an artist. He's an explorer. He has been a TV host with VH1 and with the Travel Channel and with CNBC. He's a venture capitalist and loves to make investments. He's an entrepreneur. He loves to tinker and try new things. He is a unique guy. He is an N of one. And I hope that comes across in today's conversation. So certainly we talk about mindset. We talk about his experience playing football, leadership. We talk about strategy and exploration. And really, this is a conversation about philosophy and about life as much as it is about performance. So I know you're going to love Dahani. So here is Dahani Jones. Dahani, thanks for coming on the podcast. Where I thought we'd start is, obviously, you have this amazing football career where you have to get a certain amount of reps and a certain amount of discipline that comes with it. but I was struck by the end of your career. I watched a TED Talk that you did in 2010. I know you started a TV show, I think, in 2007. And so a lot of times we're told that people have to have a singular focus to be great at something. And here you are experimenting and doing different things. So talk about your mindset back then and how you thought about approaching a multitude of interests, hobbies, careers, instead of just singular focus on football.
You know, I think my parents really set me up. They put me into Montessori, and it just opened up this world of curiosity, and I don't think it ever closed. And, you know, generally speaking, in the world, people are highly focused, streamlined, energetically, they're pointed in one direction. You know, they even have a band named One Direction, right? And you're taught that if you're the jack of all trades, you're master of none. So stereotypically and mentally, it became much of a imbalance as it was a balance, if that makes any sense. So you have this rambunctious kid that is concerned about the world, wandering around, reading his books, asking questions, taking photographs, painting, you know, just experiencing life and doing the same type of thing when I was in college, you know, just looking for the signs, exploring all the details, getting out and living. And that juxtaposed against the game of football, which is you see the ball, you get the ball. Don't worry about who's in front of you. Find a way to get around them and just get to the ball. But of course, I'm the type of person that's wondering, who's the person in front of me and what are they supposed to be doing? Now, mind you, I'm a middle linebacker and my coach is not pleased with me asking the same questions that I've been asking since, oh, by the way, that I was 5 years old, as I mentioned to you before. And so I've lived in this state of conflict. Now, what I believe it's been proven is exactly what you're talking about. What I believe it's been proven is that it's okay to have a range of beliefs. It's okay to have a range of curiosity. Matter of fact, it's even proven that it's better. It creates a greater level of elasticity, and it creates a better level of understanding of where you are in this world. You can't understand where you stand if there's not something else to reference where you're standing. You don't even know what you look like unless someone else told you. Now, would you believe just one person, or would you go to several people? In other words, had it not been for the mirror, you'd have to rely upon those items, tools that cause reflection to give you perspective. Now, back in the day, people would go to a lake, it would be calm, and you would look into the lake. All of a sudden, the storm comes, the lake is moving all over the place. You have a different, distorted view of yourself. So you go to a different lake, which might have a similar challenge, and then you might go to another one. But each place that you go, you establish a different understanding of who you are as a person. But I don't understand why in this world, we need to singularly go down one road that is the only definition of who you are, right? So aligned with that, I think it's always important to ask more people more questions, to ask them what they see in you, what they see for you to gather a better picture, a greater detailed 3D model, right? And so that's how I play the game, and that's how I play football, and that's how, you know, my curiosity kind of created conflict, but it also created opportunity.
Did you love football?
No, I love football. I mean, who doesn't like hitting people?
I've talked to a lot of football players who hesitate when I ask them if they love football.
I love the game. I enjoyed every bit and piece of it. The only part that I think that most people don't like is practice, you know? But the game of football has taught me, I mean, it's taught me so much. I mean, it's hard for me to say I didn't like it or didn't love it, because I think so many of the quandaries and so many of the variables and so many of the different equations that I've formulated in my life came from the very, very field that I played on. You know, I wasn't always comfortable. I think there were days of which I played where my shoes didn't feel as good as I thought that they would. And maybe that hit was a little bit aggravating and my coach was a little bit annoying sometimes. But I think in the end, I loved the game that gave me the tools necessary to move into the real world.
And when I think of football, I think of discipline as well. And as I hear you talk at the beginning of this conversation, I hear an artist. And even as I prepped for this conversation, there was an interview where you're bringing in Shakespeare. And I saw, I think it was in your TED talk, you were talking about how you think of football almost like an artist does. And that's how you see the game. And a lot of times people that are creatives and are artists sometimes lack discipline. And sometimes people that are very structured and disciplined lack the creativity or the curiosity. And it sounds like you've been able to blend both. What causes you to blend discipline with creativity?
You should see my desktop. My desktop would be a mess in most people's eyes. I think, you know, that's one I think I've always wrestled with, because I do believe that there's a bit of chaos, and there's also a strong case for discipline, right? But I see how things align through the chaos. But oftentimes it's more of me having to explain to other people what the chaos means to them as being ones that are more disciplined. But, you know, the interesting thing when it comes to football or, you know, any other thing that you do, there's always time to be spent with people that actually want to know how you're thinking or what you're actually thinking about. It's just the challenge of the question. If I just could be just frank, right? It's a challenge of that curiosity. A lot of times what might look like confusion is just a misunderstanding, because the fact that you just haven't asked enough questions in order to kind of get to the point of which you realize what you're seeing. And it's the same thing from a creative to someone that is a little bit more organized. Like, so I go on fishing trips, right? And I go with some incredibly, you know, amazing friends, but we always book our trips 8 months in advance. I've never booked anything 8 months in advance in my entire life, but they get me to book my trip 8 months in advance. And it just, sometimes I just have to calm down, right? Because I'm like, there's so many things that can happen between now and even 1 month beforehand, right? But my friends say we have to be organized. So I give half of my deposit and then I wait. And I guess apparently it's like the running joke. Like, how long is Dahani going to wait to put like his last couple dollars in? And
it's just because do you always show up? Do you always make it?
I always make it. So you don't, I always make it.
You're always there.
I'm always there. I always make it. Now, you know, I might be 10 minutes late, but look, you see that, the helmet back there? That's Michigan. I was allowed to be 10 minutes late to class in Michigan. Everybody was. And everybody knows it's the greatest university in the world. We're taught that 10 minutes late is right on time.
Now so, you're not being curious. Now you sound very convicted. And you hear that? There's no curiosity. Like, you know, perhaps it's the best university in the world. There's no curiosity to conviction.
There's no perhaps. There's no challenge around it. It's just facts.
And he said this before 2024, by the way, because I heard him interviewed previously, and the host was asking if Harbaugh was the right coach for Michigan. And Dahani was saying back then that he thought he was. So, but curiosity and conviction, let's just go there for a minute, because like I have found in my life that when I'm convicted on something, like saying Michigan is the best university in the world,
that 1817.
I'm good at doing that. Like, I'm capable of presenting an argument and being convicted and passionate about something.
Oh, it feels good.
It feels good, right?
It feels good to have conviction.
Conviction is, it feels good. But the older I get, and I'm not that old, the more I appreciate what you were talking about before, which is curiosity and staying open to multiple narratives and multiple ways to look at the same thing. And I find myself drawn to people that are curious. I mean, our first interaction today, the first 15, 20 minutes, you were asking me a bunch of questions. I like that. I feel connected to people when they're curious about me, and I feel connected to things when I'm curious about that. But I struggle with, where am I going to be curious and where am I going to be convicted? How do you suss out? And I'm middle linebacker, like, you don't have time to be curious. See ball, you know, see guy, hit the hole, make the play. It's fast, it's quick. So there's got to be conviction that you have, but then the learning and watching film, there has to be curiosity. So there's this blend of curiosity and conviction that we need, and probably investing is the same way. I mean, the blend of curiosity and conviction and when we're each, I find to be so, so valuable.
Yeah. And I think there's a range to that as well. I mean, some people identify or come to a conviction much sooner than other people. I don't know if that makes that person any more or less curious than the one that it takes a little bit more time in order for them to get to a point of conviction. I think there's also another variable that could be taken in consideration aside from just time and research. It might be relationships that might be able to provide different levels of input that change the level of conviction and the time at which it takes you to work through the curiosity in order to arrive there. But I think conviction sometimes is more of an easy route, right? To walk down the street and say, you know what? This is concrete. This is stable underneath my feet. And never question or wonder if it actually is concrete or if there's another type of stone that might be better represented by another name, so to speak, or another element, right? And I'd say in the game of football, yes, there is a tremendous amount of latitude for curiosity in my world. But when it comes down to the game, you can process as much curiosity as possible. You have to present conviction when you're tackling someone, because there's no curiosity in terms of wrapping somebody up, picking them up, and putting them down on the ground. And I think that speaks to the time of which it takes you, and then at the same time, the moment of which you have to make that decision. But I think that too is tough. Sometimes, but to arrive at it means that you've studied diligently, you've seen the signs, and you've acted accordingly.
Was there anything you did to shift from sort of your mindset that you would have in practice or watching film to your mindset on game day to make sure that it was maybe not asking questions now, but actually seeking answers? Was there any shift that took place for you on game day?
Well, I gave myself the week. So there's a funny story. So when I was on the Giants, my rookie year, my linebacker coach was Tom Olivadotti. My defensive coordinator was John Fox, the head coach. Our head coach was Jim Fossil. Broncos. Jim Fossil, who's since passed, God rest his soul. And Sean Payton was the offensive coordinator. I mean, there's so many people that have been in the league for a long period of time and been incredibly successful. Strahan was on my team, Jesse Armstead, so many great players, right? Amani Toomer, University of Michigan, go blue, the greatest university in the world. And so I'm in the linebacker room, and I'm this young kid. And I remember at Michigan, if you're a young kid, we'd call you a yap, which would be, I guess a lot of people probably don't know, but it's a young ass punk. It's yap, right? So like, where are you going? Yap, right? So like, I'm the yap now of the Giants. And, you know, I'm sitting there, it's Michael Barrow, Jesse Armstead, Keith Mitchell. I mean, we've got some great players. I mean, Jesse and, you know, had played with LT, right? So he comes from a different way of thinking. So Tom Olivadotti, been around for a long period of time. And so here I come from the University of Michigan, and I start asking a bunch of questions. T.O., as we called Tom Olivadotti, says, hey, why are you asking me all these questions? I'm like, I just got a bunch of questions. And so a couple days into my barrage, as he calls it, a bunch of questions, he says, "All right, Tahani, you got 3 questions a day." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? 3 questions? You expect me to perform my job?" And he's like, "Before you even start to come back at me with some sort of explanation as why you should be able to ask more questions, you have 3 questions, right?" So quickly, and I've dealt with this same type of experience several times in my life, albeit I've matured through it. And hopefully I've learned, right? Because the young kid that was in elementary school asking a bunch of questions, like I said, my parents set me up, right? Going to elementary school, going to middle school, going to high school, different coaches, different teachers, they too got annoyed with my questions. But I think that I was able to sort of massage my curiosity because I was a young kid. But now I'm in this professional world. Teo's like, 3 questions. Long story short, I was like, fine. I'll ask 3 questions. So I would ask 2 questions after that day. And then I bought a book and I would write all of my questions in the book. So I said to him, I said, fine, I'll ask 2 questions and here, can you answer all these questions? So sometimes, yeah, you know, sometimes it's being able to kind of figure out a way to get the things that you need in order to be successful. And then what I would do is on Sunday, I would just turn it all off because I had reached my conviction and I would go out and play. And I think that each person has a certain amount of, like, as I said before, range, a certain level which they need to go through their own personal exploration of creativity or questions in order and curiosity in order to arrive at that conviction. So I had to give myself a date and time in order to do that and then just let the rest of my brain run free.
What do you do now?
I imagine it's a little bit the same. Like I said, my desktop is a mess, but eventually everything starts to make sense and I give myself a certain amount of time. Or if it's in a case of an investment, I give myself a certain amount of time because they're not going to hold the door open for me to put capital into the business. If it's a company that I need to evaluate on behalf of someone else, they're not going to give me an entire year to evaluate. They're going to have their own time frames of which they're operating against, of which I need to operate against too, if I'm to work with them, right? So there's always going to be some door that you eventually have to walk through. And I think, as I mentioned before, the game and my parents setting me up, as it too forced me through a funnel of being able to establish a better timeline for me and my curiosity and my creativity to arrive at the point of conviction, it too provided me that tool so that I knew how to put it into my own sort of box, if you will, how much time I had to ask questions before I had to actually deliver an answer.
When you say your parents set you up, what exactly do you mean by that? I think you used it 3 times.
They sent me to Montessori school.
So the Montessori school was the same.
Yeah.
And your parents are military?
They set me up. They set me up.
Were your parents military?
Yeah, they were military.
So, like, once again, if someone were to guess halfway through this conversation, I don't think they would have guessed that your parents were military.
I almost went to the Naval Academy.
So, like, when I think of military, and we've had a lot of military on this podcast, the way you're describing your upbringing and the curiosity and the play and the exploration, and even the way you are today, it doesn't strike me as military. What about your parents was different from maybe other military kids that you've witnessed over the years?
Well, I think my dad had a natural wanderlust spirit. Or has a natural wanderlust spirit. And via circumstance, he found his way into the military, right? Sometimes military is not a necessary choice. Sometimes it's the right option at the right time. Now, how you navigate through the military, that comes with its challenges dependent upon where you fit on that spectrum and that range of curiosity. Some people are, look, see ball, get ball, see target, hit target. Other people are, well, sir. And, you know, obviously within the military, you're not really given enough latitude to ask questions about what you're supposed to accomplish. You're just supposed to do that. I do believe that there is a little bit of flexibility, but arguably not that much. That's what the military represents. My mother, she graduated high school when she was 16, 15, and then went to school and became a physician. So, you know, her life as an incredibly intelligent prodigy, just sort of, I can only imagine in her brain how fast things arrived. And she was able to process through them. And then the military became an amazing outlet for her creativity into the world of medicine, right? So those two unique environments, I think, ushered in an opportunity for their son to go to the Montessori school, ask a bunch of questions, and then be surrounded by those that had navigated their own level of curiosity through very strict environments. And what I mean by them setting me up is they purposely put me into the, you know, they put me into the hornet's nest, right? And then all of a sudden said, okay, well, you know, if you can survive this, you can basically survive anything. But what I didn't realize is that what I needed to survive was actually how to better control some of the curiosity and the questions that I had. And then at the same time, be able to sort of manage my way, not actually manage is the wrong word, find my way through those that were at the same time as curious as I was and still am, bring them along for the ride, and then learn from those that were a little bit more directionally focused in the things that they were doing in order to kind of put together this perfect football, right, that would fly through the air and land at its target.
Why didn't you go to the Naval Academy?
Well, I kind of feel like if I went to the Naval Academy, I might have gotten kicked out the first couple of days. But no, in all honesty, I went to the Naval Academy. I really enjoyed it. But Michigan was the better choice. You know,
is it like growing up, we went to the same high school. You're a little bit older than me, a little bit wiser than me, a little grayer than me, although I might be balding more than you. But growing up, like, I think I might have been in eighth grade when you all were in the state championship at University of Maryland. I think I went. Were you twice? I was there for one of them. Did you played in both of them?
Played in both. I mean, the last one, I was hurt for half the season.
Right.
I had back surgery going into my senior year in high school. And, you know, I didn't play till October and still ended up in a great position going to the, you know, state championship, albeit we lost. But, you know, these are the challenges that you sort of work through along the way in the world of sports.
The reason I bring up childhood here is, for me, there's like a story of you maybe not playing football and going to become a doctor. Is that a made up story? That's a real story.
Yeah.
So like you mentioned the military part, you mentioned your mom being a physician. What led you to pursue football instead of medicine and go down a different path than maybe what you were looking at from a medical standpoint?
Well, my real passion, which you've touched on several times, is art. You know, I always wanted to be an artist. I think that the images or the waves of creativity have always struck me in so many different ways. I mean, I studied part of it when I was in college. Even now, so I collect art. Even now, so I talk to people about art so that I can become a better collector. I hope I reach that level at some point. But the world of art, as I always kind of had mentioned to my family and some of my friends, doesn't necessarily, or didn't at that point in time, really kind of pay until you die, right? Like, think about it. Like the stereotype of, you know, you live an artist's life, you live a very, you know, you don't necessarily have that much, you know. It's like the artists, they're always struggling, right?
Struggling artist.
The struggling artist,
go
right?
Together. Yeah.
And I loved nice food and and I like nice things. And so I would always balance, and the joke was, I always loved Benihana's in Tokyo, and the steak and lobster was like so much my favorite. And I would have that hopefully, you know, for my birthday. I would always have very, very small birthday parties, so I could always go to Benihana's in Tokyo. It's my favorite.
By the way, I had Benihana birthday parties too.
The best.
And it's in my neighborhood. So when we break bread together, I'm sneaking away from my wife who never wants to go to Benihana.
It's the best.
And we're going to go chop it up with butterflying and shrimp flying and
choo-choo trains, heartbeats,
volcano,
volcanoes, you know, like flying shrimp tails in the hat. I mean, it's like spinning eggs. It was like part of my childhood.
I can literally walk there. You sure you didn't want to move to my neighborhood? We can walk to Benihana.
Remember when it used to be in the Air Rights building? That was the best one. You go down the stairs, 100%. You go across the little bridge, and you go right there into the Benihanas. It was my favorite. So I had this love of Benihanas. My mom was like, look, you can't afford Benihanas if you're going to be a doctor. I was like, okay, fine. So I actually read Gifted Hands by Dr. Ben Carson, and he was talking about being a neurosurgeon and how he worked with different twins and things like that. And so I actually found sort of a place within the world of creativity that I thought I could make substantially amount of money, and that being a neurologist, but a pediatric neuroplastic surgeon was what I kind of had aspired to be, because I was like, okay, I can creatively put people back together, and I can use my hands, gifted hands, Ben Carson, and bring people, you know, to the life that they'd like to lead, and take care of young people. And look, doctors are very, very successful. And so I could go to Benihana's as much as possible. Right. It just so happens that, you know, taking that path and going to the University of Michigan, where I did do pre-med, and I actually created my own major, which allowed me to have this world of medicine and then also this world of creativity, was happening at the same time of the world of football. Like, you know, it's weird. Life, you never expect or understand how that unique variable kind of like gets thrown out there, right? In other words, you make an amazing dish and all of a sudden it tastes a little bit different the next day. And you're like, wow, this is amazing. What'd I do? And then you just think to yourself, oh, I accidentally messed up, you know, tablespoon versus teaspoon, right? That little extra variable sometimes is a surprising delight in your life. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with consuming and going with it, because it was put there for a purpose and for a reason. And football was that, you know, surprising variable, that surprise and delight. That surprise and delight that became that unique variable that essentially changed everything. So medicine sat there and art sat there. And then all of a sudden, here I come to New York City asking all of my questions, consolidated down to three and one book.
It's amazing. You were talking about the linebackers in the room when you got to the Giants. And one of them, you mentioned Keith Mitchell, who we've had on the podcast.
Oh, you have it on the podcast.
And Keith has this watershed moment where he gets tackled. Gets hit, and for a moment, you know, for more than a moment, for a little bit, it becomes paralyzed. And you know, now he's obsessed with yoga and mindfulness, and you know, fascinatingly unique human being Keith is. And I'm curious, for you, was there a watershed moment that sort of changed your perspective on how you see things, or guided you into a different direction? Or was your tablespoon moment where all of a sudden there's a discovery that causes you to go down a different path?
I'd say that there's a couple challenging moments. I think those could be quite similar. And I have to kind of talk through it in order to kind of figure out if one of them was like a seminal moment where things essentially changed. I mean, when, you know, when I got to the Giants, I tore my ACL basically like the second practice. And so I had to make a decision whether I wanted to play the game or not. I had to make a decision whether I wanted to get better or not. I think that was a critical juncture in life of which there wasn't curiosity. It was more of, okay, do you want to do this or you not want to do this? Because you're going to do this, you got to work really, really hard in order to build your legs back so that you can actually play this game.
And by the way, just to give some context, like Dahani ended up playing in the NFL for 10 years, but you came in as a sixth round pick. And for those unfamiliar with the NFL, it is definitely not guaranteed for a sixth round pick to make the team and then to continue playing. So that background might be helpful as well as you share.
Yeah. No, I mean, playing the game for a long period of time is definitely unfounded. But coming off of an ACL reconstruction is that much more difficult. And then, you know, making a decision of whether I want to stay on the Giants or go to a different team and then ending up on the Eagles. And there was a little bit of friction, I think, in terms of the way that you think or the way that I was thinking or the way that they were thinking or the way that we thought together. You know, you think back in 2004 and 2005, as I mentioned before, within the game of football or any sport, there wasn't really latitude for creativity. And what I mean by that is nobody really wanted players to do anything else except for play the game. Now you have NIL and you're doing different things in order to kind of boost your platform and your brand so that whatever product you might have sells that much more, right? Teams want players to come there that have greater followings so that they have more ticket sales and therefore they make more money and you make more money. These weren't the same incentives that you might have had back in 2005 and 2004 because it was a little bit more of a linear oriented, not streaming, diversified iPhone digitized world of which we sit today. And I actually started a TV show called, or got picked up to be on a TV show called Timeless on ESPN. I was one of the first players to have his own TV show at the same time he was playing. And I don't think that the team appreciated me having sort of an ability to use my physical side and my creative side. I don't think they wanted that. And so there was always this point of tension. And at some point I decided to go train in California. I came back, played that season, and I ended up getting cut. So I would say when I got cut, that was another unique moment in time of which I needed to really evaluate my love for the game or my love of life. And so I moved out to California. I ended up going to training camp at the Saints. I was there for a cup of coffee and it didn't work out. I got cut again, moved back to California. Got a call from the Bengals, went to go try out for the Bengals. It was a great tryout. It was fine. I got back to the hotel. I asked my agent if there was a flight out. I didn't get a flight out. The next morning, they offered me a contract. I mean, who knows what could have happened had I flown out the night before? Would I have been on the Bengals? No idea. I can't look at it like that. All I can say is that I stayed over. And I ended up on the Bengals. And it was a great 4 years that essentially changed my perspective of the entire game. I think the last 4 years of my career, I came to love and appreciate the game because those that were around me appreciated me. Right? And I think it was the exploration of who I was, not only in college, as I told you, I studied myself, but the exploration and pushing the boundaries of being on the Giants and being on the Eagles that kind of allowed me to arise at this moment or to arrive at this moment where all of a sudden I'm playing on this team and I'm playing for a family that has been in the game for a long time. And I still remember, you know, I still remember Mike Brown walking up to me after he learned about some of the stuff that I was doing. And he said, you know, I remember when players used to have two and three jobs, right? So in a lot of cases, your curiosity and the world of which you live and the boundaries you push can be softened by those that understand who you are. And when I got to the Bengals, I think I finally found my family, right? Now, people always say, which is your favorite team? I say, the Giants raised me. They raised me. I was a child. They raised me. And Wellington Mara and, you know, Mr. Tisch, they gave me every opportunity and every chance in the world, right? When I got to the Eagles, you know, I taught some valuable lessons. I had to grow up really, really fast, right? And then all of a sudden I get to the Bengals and they polished me. Mike Brown, Marvin Lewis, you know, they polished me. I mean, I got in a fight my first day of practice. And I think I fought maybe three or four people, including the coach, not physically. Actually, the players, yeah, physically. But coach is like verbally, right? Never, I'm not going to cross that line. And got kicked out of practice. And the next day I got called back. And then we had a game against Seattle. They put me in because everybody else fell out or got hurt, unfortunately, went down. So I'm in the middle of the game, made a couple plays, came back home, went into the office. And Coach Lewis is like, we want you to be captain. Right? It's crazy, right? So I can point to some of these different moments along the way of my career. And I don't know, as I said before, because there's plenty of others that happen, but they all had a unique angle on and a unique variable. Now, to the second or to the third degree, I don't know how much it influences the overall outcome or the overall answer to the equation, but they were pretty essential and game changing in my life.
Even today, you mentioned your interest in food. All right. So you open Bowtie Cafe. We haven't even talked about philanthropy, but you've been heavily involved in different philanthropic pursuits. We've got investments. We've got cycling, I know, is important to you. Before we started recording earlier today, we were talking about golf and your interest in golf.
Love golf. It's one of the greatest sports in the world.
When do you feel
it'd be the greatest sport in the world?
Golf.
Golf. It's the ultimate lesson.
Yeah, what do you love about golf?
It's the ultimate lesson. You get 72 strokes. And you get more. All you got to do is.
I know. I don't get 72. So I don't get 72 swings.
I don't get 72 either. I mean, sometimes it takes me 120.
Do you feel grounded? Do you feel grounded on a golf course? You feel like.
Oh,
what do
yeah.
you feel like?
On a golf course, I think. I mean, I always explain golf because so many people just look at me like I'm crazy. They're like, what are you talking about? Golf is the greatest sport in the world. You want to learn about yourself. You want to learn about other people. You want to learn about life. You go to the golf course. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is just sit there and just listen. It's the most amount of open space with the most amount of, you know, lessons to be taught and or lessons to be learned by virtue of the amazing and unique people that play the game that have such a varied perspective. But then all of a sudden you pick up a club and you become one of them. Now you're walking with yourself and you have plenty of discussions between the first hole and the 18th hole, and that's with yourself. But then you also have plenty of discussions with other people. And if you're playing with one, or if you're playing with three others, you might be playing in a group of eight, and you know, one group is hitting up on the next, but you're still kind of creating this environment of banter and intellectual curiosity and challenge. And, but at the same time wrapped in honor, right? That's golf. You hit the ball, and you have a high level of expectation that's carried with you with that ball to on an honor system, write down the amount of strokes that you hit the ball. Now it doesn't, the amount of strokes doesn't matter. You know, the amount of strokes matter, but how the ball gets there is dependent upon you. And there's all these different variables that happen. You hit the ball pure. I mean, I love hitting my 7-iron off of a short par 4, 100 and, you know, let's just say I'll give myself some grace, 165 yards, you know, a nice draw. And you think that you've hit the greatest shot in the world because you're setting up a, you know, a chip and a putt, if you will, right? Or approach in a putt. And in the air, all of a sudden a breeze comes out of nowhere and just knocks the ball down. You know what I'm talking about, you know? Or it's the perfect flight and all of a sudden hits the ground and it plugs. Like, what? Or it has the perfect loft and then a branch strikes it. Or it lands on an ant farm. Who knows? There's all these different things. And then you got to just go do it again. I can wax poetic on the world of golf for a very, very long time. I think the point I'm trying to make is there's no greater point in time where you can take 4 to 5 hours, depending upon how you play and who you play with, to learn 120 lessons about yourself.
Do you get that when you cycle?
Cycling, I think I go into a different frame of mind when I'm cycling. I go into this solitary focus of my body is doing something. Now I just need to focus on my brain. It's kind of like the whole pat your head and, you know, circle your stomach. What is it? Pat your head? Is it pat your head and circle stomach? I don't know which one it is. It's one of those kid things, you know? But when I'm on the bike and I'm just pedaling, I'm just going up and down, I'm up and down, I'm up and down. I kind of get into this rhythm and then my mind starts to reveal itself to me. And it gives me an opportunity to kind of go through each and every door of ideas that I've been lamenting on or I've been thinking about for whatever amount of time. And I think each person has their tool or their experience where they need to go into that space where then all of a sudden all is revealed, if you will. But that happens to me in swimming. That happens to me in cycling. I don't like to run. I mean, I'll do sprints, but long distance, come on, man. Maybe it's a cycling high. Maybe it's a swimmer's high. Okay. I don't know. It's something, but I love cycling. I still remember the first bike that I bought. I still remember being on a road bike for the first time and how smooth the tires felt on the asphalt of the parking lot. I mean, I still remember my Mongoose, my Haro. I remember all these bikes. I mean, I'm on the board of Outside Interactive. And part of the reason why I love Outside, and, you know, we own a bunch of different properties. We own Outside Magazine. We own Pink Bike. We own, you know, Clean Eating. We have a whole portfolio of businesses that essentially are wrapped up into this profile of who somebody is and what they aspire to do, right? That's getting outside. Quell the noise. Let's just focus on the environment, which could be called yourself, or it could be the world around you, or your family, or your friends.
So I know that you're comfortable being 10 minutes late, but I'm not comfortable when Donnie got on. He's like, yeah, I got to pick up my kids. I'm not going to be the reason.
No. We go a couple more minutes. Let's go a couple more minutes.
All right, we'll go a couple more. Because the interesting thing that I was thinking about with you before we were talking, before we started recording, like, you literally, part of the reason you picked where you lived is you're like, yeah, easy access to airport, easy access to this airport. Like, I can get out. I'm not like stuck. And in my mind, I'm thinking like, wow, when does this dude like ground himself? When is he just like, I don't want to say present, because I felt like you've been very present for the last, you know, 45 minutes or so.
Has it been like 45 minutes?
Yeah.
I guess each of my questions, I answer it like 10 minutes, 20 minutes.
But I think what's fascinating about you is like, there's this part of you that goes and explore. You're definitely an explorer in these amazing ways. And yet you're back to where you went to high school. And, you know, I don't know where you quite consider home. I think you have a lot of different places that you'd consider home, but there's a part of you that loves to explore, but then I can feel a part of you that loves to be. And perhaps that's why maybe sometimes you're 10 minutes late. You like to be where you're at when you're there, but then it's clear you love to be involved with like a multitude of things and don't want to be put into a box and seen as like one dimensional. And I think I told you before we started recording, like, my favorite podcast guests are the people that are multidimensional, because I think most humans actually are. Not every human gives themselves permission to step into the multi-dimensions, yes, of who they are. And so, like, I find it liberating when I meet someone who's like, you might think I'm this way, but I actually have this part of me that you might not realize unless you're curious, and then you can find that out. And so this has been a blast for me, because I think we're getting access to the layers of you and who you are. We're both parents, and for me, being a dad's the hardest job I've ever had. And I think about that word curiosity, and I think about how do I not stifle the curiosity of my children? Because the reality is I do need them to listen to me. I do need them to follow directions, to put their shoes on, to be on time certain places. I coach a soccer team. There's one kid on the team. I love this kid. But if he asks me another goddamn question and we're trying to do a drill, like, I'm going to lose it. I text his dad, who knows that I love curiosity. I'm like, I love your son. But man, oh man, he's asking me. I'll tell you a quick story. We were at Walt Whitman High School, which is close to where you are. And we're practicing. And he looks up and Walt Whitman Stadium's named after somebody. And he goes, Brian, who's whatever the name is? And I look at him and I'm like, we're doing a soccer drill. Like, what does that have to do with this? But the kids, and he's brilliant. He's a brilliant, sweet, awesome kid. But I struggle sometimes when I'm coaching or I'm parenting on how to be like, all right, now's not the time for curiosity. Now's the time to go hit someone. Now's the time to play. With your own kids, how do you give them the freedom to explore and to be curious? And maybe, you know, what did you call it with the Montessori school? It was a trap, or you said earlier,
set up.
Like, how do you set them up to enjoy life, but also deal with the challenges that come with it and the messiness of life? How do you play in that with your kids?
I think you have to give I think you have to give permission, but no one should be given permission to learn. Everybody should be given an opportunity to learn as much as possible. I think that's one of the challenges that we face in life. You know, you ask, you know, I know that there have been studies, you know, of kindergartners in first grade, second grade, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the majority of kids say what? What do you think?
First, second grade, like firefighter or sports player, depending on,
They want to be an artist.
An artist.
Huh. They want to be an artist. So many kids.
Is that what you would have said when you were in first grade?
Probably.
I wouldn't.
But so many kids. I mean, from what I've read, what many educators have told me, the world of curiosity gets narrow and narrow as you get older. So you have to create the greatest aperture of opportunity to learn as much as possible when, you know, a child is young and in their youth. Or else, how do you arrive at your greatest opportunity or your greatest gift? How do you arrive at your greatest gift if you didn't even know that it existed? I feel that that is the challenge that we've all faced, or we've questioned, or, you know, and maybe that question never goes away. Right.
What are you most curious about right now?
I can go through the list. Look at all the books in the back. I've read one.
I'm going to give him a copy of my book just so he can.
I'll put it right here.
Put it right there.
You see my Churchill trophy? That's my Churchill trophy right
there. There you go. It's behind some like maize and blue helmet thing people aren't going to watch.
There it is. So, that's my maize and blue helmet. Oh, there's another one there. Oh, wait, there's one up there too. Okay. What am I most curious about? You know, I'm curious about what people really care about now, right? We have everything. We seemingly believe that we know everything. We seemingly think that we've got it all figured out, and we really don't. So I'm just curious about what people are, you know, like, where are we? I know it seems like a complicated meta, you know, macro question, but with so much at our fingertips, you know, it's, you know, what do we do and where do we go from here, so to speak, right? And I don't look at it as something that I'm afraid of. It's something I'm excited about. You know, we always say, you know, we're just sort of a blip in time, right? We're just sort of this like short moment in this long journey. Sure. Okay. But I think our blip is actually pretty big. There's a lot of things that have happened during our experience in life and through our generations of, you know, experiences, if you will. I mean, if you could just point to, we got reusable rockets, we got cell phones, we got artificial intelligence. You know, we've never been able to travel and see as much as we have. I mean, my goodness, we see into the past with the Hubble telescope. No, with the, not the Hubble telescope, with the other telescope, we can see into the past.
It's crazy.
I forgot the name of the telescope. I apologize for all the listeners that know I love space. I apologize. Forgot what the telescope was called. Is called.
Would you go to space? It's into the past.
Would I go to space?
You'd go to space. In a minute. You'd go to Mars. How about Mars?
I've signed up. I've tried to sign up. I got rejected. I tried to do the Dear Moon project. I tried to sign up with Elon, going to Mars. I've tried to petition and try to get on with Blue Origin. I would love to go to outer space. I would go to outer space tomorrow.
How long are they saying the trip to Mars is going to take?
Doesn't matter.
You don't. You're gone. You're gone.
I would go. Why wouldn't you go?
I don't know.
Why?
Why
wouldn't you go?
I have a hard time leaving to go to South Carolina for a speaking gig.
But if you were in New York City and it was 1882, okay? Taylor Sheridan, 1882, and you're living on the East Coast and you had an opportunity to go west. Would you have gone west? Would you have tried to establish a new territory? Would you have wandered out into the fields and taken a carriage load of a chuck wagon of food and brought your, you know?
So are you going to Mars with your family or are you going by yourself?
That's a big question. I would love to take everybody with me.
Yeah, because in my mind I'm going by myself. In my mind I hadn't even thought about like, oh, my family could come with me.
I would love to take everybody with me. I would love it if you could sign up, just go, right? Who knows what's going to happen? There's such an amazing world and so many dimensions that are out there that we have yet to explore. And I think that we should never limit our curiosity. We should never limit our brain's opportunity to see and to experience more light. And what that light does, it shines upon the details that we would have never known had it not been revealed.
How are you during the pandemic?
Great.
Really?
Yeah. I got on the phone. I talked to a bunch of people. I got on a bunch of Zooms. I connected with a bunch of people. But I think that just as much as one might travel and find peace, one can also stay in one spot and find peace just the same. It just takes a different orientation and it takes a moment to sort of dial it in. And as human beings, we're quite flexible. We have tremendous capacity and, to your point, tremendous range. And all we need to do is hone it in. And I think that, as I mentioned from the beginning, the game of football has provided me an opportunity to be creative and to learn this world of discipline. And sure, I've bumped up against a couple of different resistances, but I've been able to commingle the two. And I think that my curiosity and my discipline is the same as your curiosity and your discipline. I just might have a different range of curiosity than you, but I think we all started off as beings that believed and loved curiosity more than anything else in the world.
I'm with you on that. And I think it's an interesting question. Like, I love how you even talked about like having peace at home, because I consider myself an explorer in a lot of ways. And I love traveling. In the last month, I've traveled a ton. And I love to also be grounded at home. I love both. And I think for me, Mars is, that's a big meal for me to try to chew and take on. And I'd love to tell you I would go out west to go get gold and go be an explorer in that way. I'm not sure I would. So it's interesting as we all think about like what gives us peace, what also gives us excitement. Like this podcast has given me so much excitement because I get to explore with people for an hour. And that, like when you said, I didn't even know what time it is. Like that is how I love to be. I love to be in a space where I can lose track of time. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of different ways to experience that, including, you know, playing with my kids sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes. So you can get into that state. So Tahani, man, I know we want to play golf together, but I'm going to Benihana with you and we are going to celebrate. It's almost my birthday. So we can pretend, you know, we can go there for my birthday. We can come back. We can drink some wine together if you like to drink wine. I don't know how wine is after Benihana. We can find out. That would be an exploration. But I'm just grateful. I will tell you, and I think I said this to you prior, growing up in this area, and having friends and being back home, your name, the amount of times people are like, you haven't had Tahani on the podcast? Tahani. It's like, it's all these connections to you. And I don't think it just has to do with your ability to tackle people. There are other athletes that I know that have come out of this area. Not that many, let's be real, but there have been enough. And they're not like yelling at me to interview that person or this person. I think the reason why people that listen to the podcast have asked me like, hey, how haven't you had Tahani on, is because you are intentional with how you go about your life and you're intentional with how you set it up. And every day I feel as though you're exploring and trying to connect with someone or something that is unique and different. And those are the type of people that I am so fascinated to talk to and connect with. I want to give you a megaphone because whether it's the nonprofits you're interested, the restaurant, investments, whatever it is that you want to promote, I always like to give people the opportunity to share whatever they're passionate about. You've already given Michigan enough love in this conversation. So there's your Michigan love. We've taken care of that. But if there's a nonprofit that you're passionate about or something that you want to give a megaphone to, what do you have in mind?
No, I would say, I would say the most important thing that we can do as a society and as people is to learn about one another. You know, I often talk about, you know, the next time you travel, the next time you're on the train, plane, you know, you might be on a boat, you might be in a car. Maybe take a second to sort of ask the person next to you why they're sitting next to you. You know, you're on a bus in New York City. Out of all the people in the world, why are you sitting next to them, standing on the subway, on an airplane? I don't care if you're in the middle row, if you're in the back of the plane, front of the plane, in line. Why are you next to that person? I think my amplification is for those to be that much more curious and to be that much more interested in those that are around you. Because they're there for a reason. You might ask all these questions of people along the way, and the person that actually might have the answer has been standing next to you for the last 30 minutes, but you never thought to do so. And I think we take for granted oftentimes how, you know, whether you want to call it synchronicity, whether you want to call it happenstance, whether you want to call it, you know, this moment in time means. And it means a lot more than most people give it credit for. And so, sure, there's a lot of things that I do and people that I participate with and ventures that I've spent time on. But the one that I love is, why am I next to you?
I think that's a beautiful place for us to close. The honey, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I look forward to being next to you in person at some point soon, and just appreciate you. So thanks for the time, and I'll talk to you soon.
I see you, Benihanas.
Thank you for listening to Intentional Performers with Brian Levinson. Here is this week's episode gem.
In a lot of cases, your curiosity and the world of which you live and the boundaries you push can be softened by those that understand who you are. And when I got to the Bengals, I think I finally found my family, right? Now, people always say, which is your favorite team? I say, the Giants raised me. They raised me. I was a child. They raised me. And Wellington Mara, you know, Mr. Tisch, they gave me every opportunity and every chance in the world, right? When I got to the Eagles, you know, I taught some valuable lessons. I had to grow up really, really fast, right? And then all of a sudden, I get to the Bengals and they polished me.